Some rock stars just nail it when it comes to the whole rock and roll thing. The mood, the feeling. Jimi Hendrix comes to mind, but part of what that's about is not just music. It's a shared idea of what a rock star is, what a rock star looks like. And that idea comes from photographs, specifically photographs that appeared in Rolling Stone magazine in the 1960s. There's an exhibit at the Kansas City Library right now with photographs by Baron Wolman, one of Rolling Stone's very first photographers. He captured what are now iconic images of Jimi Hendrix, Jerry Garcia, Mick Jagger. The list goes on. He's 81 now, and man, does he have some stories. We will talk to Baron Wolman pretty soon, but first, the curator who brought this exhibit to the library. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and Ben Alvers, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So how did you first find out about Baron Wolman and become interested in him?
Well, I had apparently known of his photographs. I actually had one that I had cut out of a Rolling Stone magazine that was hanging in my bedroom in high school. This picture of Jerry Garcia with his hand up like that. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't have any idea who the photographer was. But fast forward 20 years, and I'm now in Lawrence, Kansas. A mutual friend, Steve Herzog, is a friend of Baron's, and he brought me a book. And I was the curator at the Lawrence Art Center at that time. And he said, let me know if you ever want to meet this guy. And I was like, of course I want to meet this guy. And that's how it sort of began.
Why do these photos he took matter as far as you're concerned? Like, what's their larger significance in 2018?
That's a good question. I think, you know, layered into something like this, all of these images of these people, these personalities that we have some sort of relationship with, we know of them. Certainly there are many people who have come to see the photographs who were of that generation. I think they transcend the sort of nostalgia of that period. I think it's an interesting story on different levels with the birth of that publication, which became sort of a standard for music and music coverage. And he was there when it was being born. And that's a fascinating story. But I think the subject matter itself certainly has made an impact on popular culture.
Tell me about some of your favorite photos in the show.
I think there's an epic trip that he took via Rolling Stone to London in 1968, where he photographed the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and the Who all within a span of 48 hours. Like, who's seen all three of those, you know, bands within that time period? The photographs that were generated from there, I think, were really great, especially The Who, one of my favorite bands. They're recording Tommy, which is probably one of their best-known pieces. But if you pay attention to the detail of what's being documented by him, you know, you get a sense of the personality of those four individuals, and Pete Townsend in particular.
There is an image of Pete Townsend from that series where he is listening back to his own recording, and he's got a beer bottle pressed up to his lips, and he looks so young, and he looks so focused, but also, like, very, I would say, pleased with what he's hearing.
There is an intensity to it. That photograph is one of my favorites, and it's very telling. But I also think there's another photograph of all four of them. There's a lot of fashion involved with all of these personalities that Baron photographed. Seeing, you know, the other three members dressed up, and then Pete Townsend is in, like, jeans and a T-shirt and, like, work boots. Like, he, to me, that sort of amplifies his drive.
You call the show Backstage Pass. Why is that?
Well, I think if you read Baron's work, he has several books, but he talks about, you know, he was only there for 3 years, the first 3 years of Rolling Stone magazine. And he talked about the accessibility. That was the foundation of his interest, is having access to people. And when that shifted, his interest changed in the field, and he stopped doing it. So I think Backstage Pass, you know, has all sorts of implications, but I think he had the ability to have that kind of access to those particular performers.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and today we've been talking about an exhibit of photographs at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. The exhibit is called Backstage Pass, and it's got photos of people like Jimi Hendrix, Tina Turner, Jerry Garcia, Johnny Cash, Mick Jagger, Pete Townsend, Frank Zappa. You get the idea. When you pictured the people I just named, there's actually a really good chance that the image that popped into your mind is in this exhibit because it was originally a photograph taken by a guy named Baron Wolman for Rolling Stone magazine. Baron is joining us now from a studio in New Mexico. Hi, Baron.
Hey, Gina. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. Let me warn you that, fair warning, that I had vocal cord surgery a couple of years ago, so my voice sounds like Miles Davis after he had vocal cord surgery. So if I'm not as clear as you are or as Ben was, you'll know why.
You sound awesome. You sound great.
Okay, thank you. I just want to let you know.
Well, how did you start taking photographs for Rolling Stone? Can you tell that story?
I had been working as a photojournalist, and one of my clients was Mills College in Oakland, California, which was a women's school at the time, but they had a very advanced music department, and they noticed that there were changes in the type of music that was being listened to and played in the Bay Area, and so that particular kind of music was rock and roll. So they decided to have a symposium on rock and roll. And they had Phil Spector was there. Bill Graham, the great producer, was there. They had a concert by Jefferson Airplane, a light show. A lot of the big promoters of music at the time, and Ralph Gleason, who was the writer, the main writer, music writer for the Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle. So I told my contact at Look magazine, where I did a lot of work, I said, I think we should cover this. This is a really important conference. He said, yeah, I think we should, but I'm booked. But I know a guy who loves music, who's writing for the Daily Cal, which, the newspaper at University of California, Berkeley, who loves music, and call him up, see if he's interested. He was, and that guy turned out to be Jan Wenner. And so Jan came over, and what I discovered subsequently is that Jan and Ralph Gleason had been talking about a publication, the publication that became Rolling Stone. It had no name, but they, in their minds, there was a void in the media for the people who love rock and roll and for the musicians themselves. So they thought it would be a good idea to establish a paper like that.
It's so hard to imagine this moment when these now just famous people, and something that we can't even imagine our culture without, just that this is so under the radar that it's like this university music department noticed something that was happening. You know what I mean?
I do, and what's interesting is that the music was noticed in the UK, and the UK had New Musical Express, which was a publication, very long-term publication. They had Melody Maker. They knew what was going on. We didn't quite know, and those guys, Ralph and Jan, saw what was happening in the UK and said, come on, we listen to music too. Let's do something similar.
Well, the first image people see in this show is of Jimi Hendrix. He's on stage playing the guitar, of course, looking super intense, like he's wrestling his guitar almost. And on the label next to that photo, you write that you were photographing the music, not really hearing it. Can you explain that?
Well, as a photographer, I love the music, and I would have loved to just sat back and listen to him play, but I had to take pictures. So what I was trying to do was communicate to the readers of Rolling Stone what it was like to be at that concert. There's no way most people who read Rolling Stone were going to be at a Jimi Hendrix concert because, well, first of all, there was no MTV, there was no internet. The only way you'd see him if the band came to town and you were lucky enough to buy a ticket, right? So I took my responsibility to show in a photograph what it was like to be there. What if you were standing in front of Jimi Hendrix, what he would have looked like? So that's what I mean when I say I saw the music. If I stopped to listen to it, I'd miss all the good pictures, you know?
Well, I'm just going to fangirl out and ask what it was like to be around Jimi Hendrix, because you photographed him offstage, too, later on.
He was a very unique guy. I mean, he was his death was a big loss. Okay, Janis's death was a big loss. Jim Morrison's death was a big loss, but Jimmy's was bigger because he was extraordinarily creative. He had just built his the Electric Lady Studio in New York. He was looking forward to doing all kinds of new things, right? And that one moment when he made a mistake and imbibed whatever he imbibed ended a very important career. Not only was he a great musician, he was a great performer. He was socially aware. He was articulate. He would talk what it was like to be a black musician in a white culture. I mean, you could go on forever. So we would talk to him. Jan and I went and talked to him in his motel room in San Francisco, and he was really quiet. It was like this. You could hardly hear him. And, I mean, then he gets on stage that evening, and it's like, oh, my God, this is amazing. This is two different people. Not only was he articulate, not only was he intelligent, but he had a sense of style that couldn't be beat for a photographer. I mean, it was like shooting fish in a fishbowl. He was so photogenic. And I tell people, it was impossible to take a bad picture of Jimi Hendrix.
I just have a moment before I need to hand this back off, but I want you to quickly, you know, you have photos and stories about the Grateful Dead that are hilarious. You basically, like, have them trying to intimidate you in front of a San Francisco brownstone, but then you have Jerry Garcia years later for the cover of Rolling Stone looking playful, goofy, just a whole, speaking of two different people.
Well, here's the deal on that. When they were intimidating me, Rolling Stone had not yet published issue number one. So they had no idea who I was. And they were in such a mood after the press conference of the bust, the marijuana bust, that, you know, they were just out of control. And they had guns and all that stuff. And I didn't know them. They didn't know me. They said, who are you? I said, I'm Barrett. Where are you from? Rolling Stone. What's Rolling Stone? Because issue number one had not been published. That's how that happened. By the time they came to the studio, you know, for the cover session, everybody knew each other, and they were in a good mood. And I'll tell you this, Jerry Garcia, the picture that you see with his hand raised, where he's missing a finger, part of a finger, he had never shown that publicly until he came to the studio that day. What had happened is that when he was a kid, he and his brother were chopping wood. His brother said, hold this piece of wood, bang, chopped off part of his finger. And he never showed it to anybody. And you couldn't see it when he was playing because he would tuck it under. So I look at that. That was, I mean, and yet he was happy to show me, right?
Yeah, I'm so sorry to jump in here, but we got to turn this over. You're hearing behind-the-scenes stories from Baron Woolman, who took some of the iconic photos that appeared in Rolling Stone magazine in its very earliest days. I'm Gina Kaufman. We take you behind the scenes here in Kansas City every day. Help support us, and we will be right back with more stories from Baron Woolman. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman talking to Rolling Stone photographer, longtime chief photographer Baron Woolman, whose images of famous rock stars and blues musicians, we'll get to that, have become iconic. There's an exhibit of his work at the library right now called Backstage Pass. Hi again, Baron.
Hi, Gina.
You know, I just mentioned blues musicians, and we have not talked about them yet, but you have pictures of B.B. King, Sonny Rollins, Muddy Waters, Smokey Robinson. Were you a fan of those artists, too?
Well, listen, yes, and there's more to that story. And the big picture of that story is that Bill Graham, the great producer, the great music, music producer, concert producer, he recognized that the music of the blues players was a fundamental underpinning of the music of the, especially the British rockers. And so when he put on a show, he would bring in the blues guys and give a lecture about how the relationship between the music that you were going to hear from the blues morphed into the music that you were going to hear from the Stones or whoever the next act was.
So wait, like when the Who performed, some guy got up and gave a lecture first?
Well, Bill Graham would talk about it. Talk about the relationship between the blues guys that he would have play first. Because, you know, let's just say one of the best concerts I ever photographed was, of course, Jimi Hendrix. But who played first before Jimi Hendrix? Albert King. Albert King inspired Hendrix. Albert King inspired the Stones. Albert King inspired all the British bands. Not only Albert King, but B.B. King and all of the... And Muddy Waters, they all of that music made its way across the Atlantic to the bands that were playing in the UK. And Bill didn't want the people in San Francisco to not understand the relationship, because nobody was giving the blues guys any credibility, any credit for actually having created the music that it changed rock and roll.
You know, probably my favorite photo in this show is of Taj Mahal. It's a street scene, and I'm really curious about what was going on there.
Well, that was one of those lucky, photobomb moments. I was shooting Taj Mahal for the record company, and I was trying to find a situation where it looked like he would... Well, in his neighborhood, so it reflected where he was living. And so he sat down and started playing his guitar. All of a sudden, this kid walks up from the back with a 2x4, right? And he assumes a position as a musician. The kid must have been, what, 8 or 10 years old?
That's what
it looks like. I know it looks like he's played in the band. Everything about that, I didn't set that up. That was totally accidental. It was what we call a photobomb, and it was one of one of my favorite pictures too.
You know, I'd love to hear more about Taj Mahal, who his career and his personality, because you photographed him many times.
Yeah, I mean, you're asking somebody who doesn't know a lot about his career. I photographed him many times. He was a well-known blues musician. He had 17 kids, various women, that much I know. He's overweight with diabetes now, that much I know. But I really liked his music. I wish I knew more about him that I could, you know, answer your question more intelligently. I want to tell you what, can I diverge a little bit here?
Please, yeah.
Okay, so Ben was talking about the time when I went and photographed the Who recording Tommy, right?
Yeah.
So I worked all day with them and took a lot of great pictures. I'm really happy about that take. But at the end of the day, Pete says, okay, let's go out and get something to eat. While we're sitting at dinner, he said, listen, Mick is making a movie in this house in London. Let's go over and see what's going on. So we go over there. He wanted to make some trouble. So we go over there, Pete and I don't know who else was in the entourage, and we walk into the set in this house in Kensington where they're shooting Performance. And suddenly, here we are, Mick Jagger, Pete Townsend, Anita Pallenberg, Keith Richards, everybody in this room, and I start taking pictures. And one of the pictures from that moment that we created for ourselves is that shot of Mick with his painted lips and the Polaroid camera, which is really one of the most intense photos of the Jagger that I ever got.
You know, the photographs of Mick Jagger, I mean, they are crazy. So are the photographs of Frank Zappa, who is on a combine. And I cannot help but wonder, you know, the rest of these photos appear to be people either in concert or in their own working space, their own living space, but where they would be sort of naturally.
Well, look at Frank Zappa. Okay, that was a cover story for Rolling Stone. The writer and I went up to his house in Laurel Canyon. He was living in the old log cabin of the old silent film star Tom Mix. That's where his family was at the time. And around the cabin, there was a lot of acreage. And around the cabin at that time, some company had thought to develop kind of a housing project. And the thing fell through. And all around his house were these rusting what do you call them, road grading equipment, including that bulldozer. Now, I was really concerned when I went up there because Frank Zappa was extraordinarily intelligent, extraordinarily eccentric, and I had no idea how I was going to photograph him. So he just said, hey, Baron, come on, let's go start taking pictures. And he went through, he started performing for me. I really didn't have to direct him at all. He climbed up on the bulldozer and started driving the bulldozer. He went back in a cave and disappeared and came out and growled at me. Went back in and came out and growled at me again. I mean, he just one after another fabulous photo. And those things, you know, they're serendipitous. And a lot depends on the relationship between the photographer and the musician. Two people having fun, that's basically what it is.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking about an exhibit of photographs taken for Rolling Stone magazine all by one guy, Baron Wolman. We've been hearing his stories, but the show was curated by Ben Alvers, who's here with me in the studio. He originally curated it for the Lawrence Arts Center. And Ben, what do these stories that we've been hearing mean to you as someone who grew up with the images?
I think it's very relevant to the visual component of putting an exhibit together, right? So it's not supplemental information. I think it's sort of essential information because it moves beyond just the sort of facade of these icons that we all have some kind of relationship with, whether it's peripheral or it's something that we feel very intimate or close to with some of these musicians.
Just that the images are both real and constructed. We've heard about, you know, that Frank Zappa just happened to jump on a combine, that he just did that. But also, you know, in the exhibit you show contact sheets where you see many different shots of someone, and then you see the one on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine, and that one lives on our minds. But it reminds you that there could have been others.
Totally. And it's an opportunity as the viewer to get a sense of process. So what is the process for an artist or a photographer or journalist? You know, how many pieces do you have to make to get one good one? And with photography, and especially with those contact sheets, it's really apparent, you know, that just get as much as you can. And you know, the editors, you know, eventually select some. But I think for somebody like Baron, he's got such a good eye, and he puts himself in a position where the opportunity to get something really great is going to happen. And that takes skill and experience. And so I think I could get a sense of that by looking through the archives of his work.
Must have been hard to narrow it down, though.
Oh, God. Yeah, it was. I had to, like, smack myself in the face a couple of times. Like, just focus on, you've got a job to do, and quit nerding out on these things that you've been thinking about your whole life.
Baron, what do you hope people take from your photographs now that the stories of these rock and roll icons are stories for most of us about history? You took them when all of this was happening, when all of it was new, when nobody quite knew who any of these people were. Today's audience is different and is going to take something different from the images.
Well, you just answered your own question in a way. This was a period of time both exciting and innocent in this country. Changes, big changes were happening politically, musically, how people were dressing, how they were feeling about themselves, feeling a sense of freedom, you know, across many, many disciplines. And so when you look at these pictures and you look at the other pictures I took at Woodstock and in places like that, you get a window into this period of time that I think it's mythological in a way, but justifiably mythological because of how important it was in the history of this country. I mean, look at this. Woodstock was 3 days of peace, love, and music, right? At Woodstock, the preaching of the counterculture, of which I was a part of in San Francisco, actually came true. And for 3 days, there was no violence. There was only people working together, there was music, there was utopia. And then suddenly, at the end of 3 weeks, it went back to the world we know now. And so that actually presents a problem to try to understand what we were looking at as we look in these pictures and what the world has become right now. The other thing I wanted to mention is that when I die, I guess I will. Doesn't look like it's going to happen soon, but it may. But when I die, the pictures will remain, but the stories go with me. And so I feel compelled to some degree to tell the stories so that, like we're doing today, the stories remain with the pictures and you get a fuller view and a fuller kind of picture of what it was like to be alive in the late 60s. I have so many young people come up to me and say, oh man, I wish I was living in your time. You were so lucky to be living in the 60s. So that feeling of what we experienced in the 60s continues to have an effect upon the young people of America, and I think it will for a long time.
Did you ever learn, like, a life lesson from a rock star?
Oh, yeah. I learned this, like, life lesson, and it just is, I mean, this is not an X-rated show, I know, but the reason, it was clear to me that the reason the guys became guitarists was to get the women, and parallel, the reason I became a photographer was to get the women to have them, oh, can you unbutton just one more button on your blouse?
Oh, no.
That's not the lesson you're talking about. I know.
Well, it's the you gave me an honest lesson, and we're all about the news here, so I appreciate your honesty.
The other thing, one more thing I want to say, and Ben alluded to it. The only reason that I was able to get these really good pictures that I got was I was given access by, in particular, Bill Graham. And access is the key to intimate photos. If you can't get close to the musician, go backstage, go on stage, go in the front of the stage, go to their homes. You're not going to be able to get the really meaningful, soulful pictures that the majority of which I think describe what I did in my career.
Well, Baron Wellman, rock star photographer, thank you. And I love this show.
Thank you. Oh, I'm glad you have you seen it?
I have, yes.
Are you going to go back and look at it again now that you've
talked
to me?
Again, of course again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gina, and thanks for Ben being there too.
Yeah, Ben Alvers of the Lawrence Arts Center, curator of Backstage Pass, now at the Kansas City Public Library. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Gina Kaufman. My producers are Melody Rowell, Chris Young, Coy Duggar, Suzanne Hogan, and intern Sophia Gillespie. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. You can tweet us anytime. We are at KCURCST. I am at Gina KCUR. And that's it for this week here on KCUR Central Standard.